Coming up on today's family.ie radio magazine.
Well, there's a saying that says, the madder we are, the stupider we are. So our cognitions are very low when our tempers are hot and flared. So it's very hard to actually do something constructive when you're in the middle of a blazing row or in the middle of an emotional outburst.
We think you'll find our How to Drugproof Your Kids course has loads of practical suggestions like that. We'll hear more about that in a moment. And we're going to look at major issues that couples should definitely talk about, both before and after they say, I do.
We also have a thing where it talks about sex when it comes to women. And we have a box which has lots of little kind of dials and switches and things like that. And when it comes to men, there's an off switch. Yes. Sometimes men, it can be the destination, you know, conquest, you know, and sometimes it can be the journey for the women. And sometimes it's a compromise between the two sometimes. And sometimes it's maybe doing the other way for the other person because that's the way they like it.
And in our third segment today, you've probably already discovered this, but the recipe for conflict in marriages and relationships is very simple. Just start with any two people and simply add a bit of time.
They tend to be focused on the task rather than on the people. They tend to be focused on the current, but that can cause conflict because you can imagine if you're a quieter, slower, more reflective individual who likes relationships primarily, then that's going to cause conflict.
That's all ahead on today's edition of family.ie radio magazine. And you're very welcome along. I'm Ronan Johnston.
Often parents are in such stressed and such high anxiety situations that they can't see the wood from the trees. And there's benevolent aunts out there. There's key worker relationships. There's youth workers. There's all different kinds of people who have massive teachers, coaches who have massive amounts of influence on children. And if they had these skills, these core skills, they'd be much more confident, and they would also produce children who are much more confident about who they are and where they were at.
What we just heard there might sound like a course in how to raise confident kids. Well, yes, but it's much more than that. It's our training course designed to help every member of the community thrive. In addition to being successfully run throughout Ireland, it has gained traction around the world. Stephen talked with Dale Stagg, a former police detective, currently CEO of HCJB Global Australia.
I mean, we understood when we first got sight of it, it was through Care for the Family in the UK, and it had a significant use as a drug prevention program with the police forces in a number of places in the UK. And that's how we heard about it.
Yeah, that was a thrill to us to hear that, being an ex-copper myself. It's always great to hear of our various officers around the world working with the local police force to establish this program because, of course, in my career, a very large percentage of the arrests that I made, the crime I had to attend, was directly related to alcohol and other drug use. No doubt about it.
The statistics are shocking here in Ireland as well. But what can really be done to prevent it from happening to your kids? Fortunately, quite a bit. Stephen Carty, Heather Walsh and Ger Shanahan are glad to have professional childcare worker and course facilitator Paul Mangan join us on how to drug-proof your kids.
One of the things that we look at first in this session is the impact of emotions, because if we don't recognise our emotions and the way they engage us in our relationship with our child, we may not realise the impact that we're having on our child because our emotions are fraught. So if the relationship is drained or strained, then the type of relationship that we have with them is quite different than if it's on a settled footing.
Could I paint a picture here?
Go ahead, Paul.
What we have here is an iceberg, yeah? And an iceberg has 1/8 above the surface and 7/8 below the surface. So if you can imagine a human being with their behaviour and their feelings, yeah? Their feelings are 7/8 underneath the water, and their behaviour is 1/8 above the water. So when you're dealing with people and you're interfacing with people, especially in family contexts, like Stephen has just mentioned there, that the two become one. The feelings and the behaviours all get mixed up together, and one can't be identified or discerned from the other. And as parents, in terms of trying to offer structure, support, direction, all those things to young people, what we're trying to do is separate the two, segregate the two. So it's like the sinner and the sin. It's the behaviour as opposed to the person. So the person isn't bad, the behaviour is bad, or poor, or whatever word you want to put on it. But you're learning to actually identify that and identify it in the family setting with the child. So they don't get demonized and they don't get victimized. Okay, they can own their behavior and be responsible for their behavior, having been poor or being bad, but that doesn't necessarily make them bad.
So in our relationships then with our children as parents, we have to learn to relate to them in a way that in no way diminishes their feeling of being loved, but we directly address the behavior problem. And there is something we have to learn about how to do that.
Well, there's a saying that says, the madder we are, the stupider we are. So our cognitions are very low when our anger and when our tempers are hot and flared. So it's very hard to actually do something constructive when you're in the middle of a blazing row or in the middle of an emotional outburst. So we're just trying to get people to recognise what's going on within themselves before they bring that to the table with their young person. Because if you're feeling very hot or feeling very annoyed or irritated or frustrated, immediately that's going to be communicated. And as we work through the roadmap, as we work through the wheel of change, we're going to discover the skills and the deficits that we need to be able to address all of those issues. So we're communicating the right message, a positive message, that we're not part of the problem, we're going to be part of the solution.
And that's just it, isn't it? I suppose it's easy to point the finger at the schools or the Gardaí or community programs, but we need to honestly ask ourselves, when it comes to drug-proofing the kids in our care, what can we do differently? You'll find more information about our full How to Drug-Proof Your Kids course at family.ie. Find out how to facilitate a course in your area there as well. Again, that's www.family.ie. This is family.ie radio magazine. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next, oftentimes couples approach the altar with either unrealistic fears or unrealistic expectations.
There are real issues that have to be considered when we are looking at marriage. There's going to be issues like children, sex, finances. What about those?
And still to come.
If they don't learn to use both sides of love, they have a natural hard side bent that can cause problems with other people.
And don't forget that we'd love to hear from you as well. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886. And if you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us radio@family.ie. Again, that's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. So keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of family.ie radio magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of family.ie. As we continue today's radio magazine programme, we turn now to another article. Whether it's the fear of heights,
don't look down,
closed spaces,
I feel like I can't breathe,
spiders, or clowns, you name it, and I can almost guarantee there's a technical term for the phobia. But nowadays, there seems to be a prevalent fear that does not have an official label. That doesn't make it any less real.
There seems to be a commitment phobia around in relation to everything, like even just because communication is so ready and everybody's texting everybody all the time, they won't even commit to meet somebody somewhere in case there's a better option comes up in the interim, you know? Like when I was young, you had to turn up at 7 o'clock if you said you were going to be there because there was no way of getting in touch. Now, you know, as well, I'll meet you at 8. Well, it's kind of I'll meet you at 8 unless I get a better offer between now and then. And so there's a sort of a commitment phobia that's around in society, which I think it's very, very sad, because if you take that kind of attitude into marriage, you're doomed to disaster really from the start, because marriage is a commitment. And when we make vows about marriage, we are making huge commitments. So commitment really, it's kind of a dirty word nowadays really. It makes people feel maybe a bit trapped, but without commitment, marriage isn't really going to go anyplace.
Gamophobia is the fear of marriage, by the way. But if you're in a committed relationship at the moment and moving in the direction of marriage already, these programs, Marriage by Design, are for you. Oftentimes, though, couples approach the altar with either unrealistic fears or unrealistic expectations. Before we move on, I should warn you that these programs are obviously intended for mature audiences. So if you have young children nearby, you might want to make sure they're out of earshot for the next half hour or so. Some of the topics we're about to cover will probably be not suitable for younger listeners. Stephen Carty, Heather Walsh and Ger Shanahan welcomed four pre-marriage counsellors, our own Stuart Kenny and his wife, Breda, along with Alan and Diane Morris of RelationshipCentral.org. Today, we're going to look at major issues that couples should definitely talk about, both before and after. They say, I do. Here's Ger.
There are real issues that have to be considered when we are looking at marriage. There's going to be issues like children, sex, finances. What about those?
Yeah, some people talk about sex as being kind of like the icing on the cake. I look on sex as part of the ingredient of the cake, and it's mixed in with all part of it. Sometimes it can be the barometer of how the relationship is going and whether it's going through good times or bad times. As I say, sex is a beautiful thing. God created it. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. And one of the things that a lot of people, through the length of their marriage, they may have a problem when it comes to sex. And it does happen to pretty well. Diane went to a seminar and says 100% of people go through a time when sex is an issue within their own relationship. But don't be embarrassed about it. It's a thing that you can be dealt with and worked through.
I think it's communication at the deepest part of our personality. And it's just being intimate and vulnerable with another. But again, talking about it is very important. Your fears, what you like, what you don't like, what's acceptable, what's not. Very important to talk about it.
Just on the issue of sex, there are four myths that I just like to mention, because it can be a delusion sometimes, or what's there. These are they. Sex is always absolutely fabulous is one myth. Second one is that sex is always spontaneous. And again, that's a delusion. It's the investment and work that you put into it that makes it happen. Third one is working on our relationships doesn't matter. And fourthly, that we are the only ones with problems. So it's an area that's worth working on. And I mean, the difference even between men and women is so startling and so striking that the idea of preparing well for marriage helps couples or intending couples to get married to realize that this is an area that they'll encounter and it'll be normal. And they'll work their way through it. And by having the quality of relationship that they have, which means that they're intimate with each other at a relationship level, means that when this issue comes up, they can deal with it.
We also have a thing where it talks about sex when it comes to women. And we have a box which has lots of little kind of dials and switches and things like that. And when it comes to men, there's an off and on switch. Yes. Sometimes men, it can be the destination, you know, conquest, you know, and sometimes it can be the journey for the women. And sometimes it's a compromise between the two sometimes. And sometimes it's maybe doing the other way for the other person because that's the way they like it.
The evidence is supporting the fact that married couples have better sex mm-hmm. and are much more happy in their sex life than people who have sex outside marriage or those who have affairs and so on. That their sense of well-being is much higher, and there's a lot of research to prove this, that married couples have the best sex lives of all.
You wouldn't believe that, mind you, if you looked at media.
A 12-year-old child said to a teacher the other day, the teacher was telling me, she said, well, years ago people believed that sex outside marriage was sin, but it's not, sure it's not. And the teacher said, who is a committed Christian herself, said, why do you think it's not a sin? And she said, because everybody's doing it.
Well,
and
even
said,
if everyone's doing it,
exactly.
The reality is, as human beings, we're not created, and our psychosexual makeup is
yes.
such that when we have sex with other people, and even with the person we marry, outside of a committed relationship, there is a
yes.
psychological difference. And even for people
yes.
who have lived together before marriage and then decide to become married, there is
mm-hmm.
still a step change in the
yes,
relationship because it's
there
not
is.
Simply a physical
that's
thing.
Right.
Marriage is
yeah.
not simply a physical
yeah.
thing. And that's what one of the things we were talking about earlier, expectations and getting our needs met.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is more than a guaranteed access to a regular sex life. Marriage is a commitment
Indeed.
To another human being. And sooner or later, that reality has got to be faced.
Mm-hmm.
And better to face it sooner.
And the reality of it is it comes down to love, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If we really love each other,
mm-hmm.
then that covers a multitude. That's really what it's all about, loving each other and considering the other person. Mm. And eventually it will work and will be wonderful.
A good sex life has to be worked at.
Yep.
You can't just
very
demand it from
so.
Another person.
That's right.
And it doesn't happen automatically.
Mm-hmm. Marriage by Design. Find more articles, links, radio archives and resources to help your family thrive at family.ie. That's www.family.ie. We need to take a break now, but when we continue...
They tend not to be compassionate. They tend to be focused on the task rather than on the people. They tend to be focused on the current. Their perspective is such that they are great at taking charge and getting stuff done and so on. But that can cause conflict, because you can imagine if you're a quieter, slower, more reflective individual who likes relationships primarily, then that's going to cause conflict.
Keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. You've probably already discovered this, but the recipe for conflict in marriages and relationships is very simple. Just start with any two people and simply add a bit of time.
Let's have a clean fight.
Welcome once again to our family.ie radio magazine. Obviously, there can be emotional blow-ups or implosions whenever two people come together, but different personality types approach love differently. Here's John Trent, co-author of the book The Two Sides of Love.
You know, when the average person meets the person that ends up being their spouse, usually the very first thing that attracts us to that person is the fact they're so different than us. I mean, that was true with my wife, Cindy, and I. I mean, we were so different, and boy, that seemed like such a great strength. 6-8 months goes by, and Cindy is getting so frustrated with me because the very traits she saw in me that were strengths in our courtship, spontaneous, fun-loving, networker, all of a sudden she's seeing me as shallow, as somebody that can't, you know, stay on task. Otters tend to do lots of different projects, you know, and not, you know, start 20 things, not finish any, but you have a lot of fun starting them, you know. Well, my wife is a beaver retriever, so she wants to go deep in a relationship. And I didn't realize how important that was with her as a golden retriever to go deeper. And then my wife, it has a lot of beaver characteristics. She's detailed and precise and follows through. And the problem was, I was trying to change her into an otter. She was trying to change me into a beaver.
Right, yeah. What's that again? No, your man doesn't mean they were trying to cast a spell on each other. And his wife is really not a dog, by the way. What he's describing is their personality types. To help us understand some of the strengths and weaknesses of each other, here's Stephen Carty, Heather Walsh and Ger Shanahan.
So we'll say the experts, Dr. Smalley and Trent, have classified a whole suite of characteristics, grouping them together into principal types. Four animals: the lion, the beaver, the otter and the golden retriever. Mm-hmm. All right. Tell us about the lion.
Well, the lions are usually the bosses at work. They're sort of the take charge people. There's a few strengths of a lion, and I'll just give you the strengths and then Stephen's going to say something more about them. So the traits of a typical lion: they're born leaders. They like to accomplish things with immediate results. A lion's time frame is now. Do it now, people. Lions are decisive. They want Reader's Digest sized communications. So keep it simple. Lions often feel challenged by questions. And they're not afraid of pressure or confrontation. So they're the take-charge leaders. They're often the bosses, or maybe they just think they're the bosses. They're bottom-line folks. They're doers, not watchers or listeners. They like to solve problems, problem solvers. But if they don't learn to use both sides of love, they have a natural hard side bent that can cause problems with other people. So there's really good strengths in a lion, but they have to watch. The tough bit can cause problems.
You can imagine, Ger, that lions in organisations or even in families do an awful lot to protect those organisations, to do what's good, to be responsible, to take charge, be decisive and so on. But if you look at the strengths, were they to be too strong in that direction, then they don't have the capacity to value those who are softer than themselves, who are indecisive, who don't want to do things now, are not motivated in the same way that they're motivated. And therefore, that can give rise to conflict, as you can imagine. And they tend not to be compassionate. They tend to be focused on the task rather than on the people. They tend to be focused on the current. Their perspective is such that they are great, as Heather has said, of taking charge and getting stuff done and so on. But that can cause conflict, because you can imagine if you're a quieter, slower, more reflective individual who likes relationships primarily, then that's going to cause conflict. So the lion has great strengths, but out of balance and pressed too far in that particular direction, you get a dictatorship. And it's my way or the highway. And, you know, it's do as I say and do it immediately. That type of leadership works, and there are certain industries. The retail industry works very much on a lion-type orientation, in that there are bosses who give orders and people execute, and you're rewarded on delivery, etc. And there are other totally different industries, like we'll talk about later, you know, like the caring industry and so on, you know, which doesn't function like that. And you know, so those are the strengths of the lion. They bring this capacity to be decisive, take charge, and, you know, be the leader. But in excess, they do harm.
So lions, don't wear me out with
bullet points only.
I want it now. Yeah, yeah. So I can see then that those traits are very valuable. Mm-hmm. They're very valuable, and we really couldn't do without them.
Exactly.
Because we need somebody to be able to be like that, to make the decisions and drive actions and activities to produce the results we want. But I can also see how that alone, on its own, can be destructive.
Just think of the scenario, yeah. Ger, that where you know there's no lion capacity in an organisation or in a family, and lions have no problem with conflict or confronting issues. And if there's nobody to stand up and say no, for example, if my child is being bullied at school and I have no lion characteristics in that child's parents, in me or my wife, then who's going to take the case to fight for the defence of our child? So that's admirable and desirable. You just want to have it in balance.
Yeah. And if I, as a parent, do not have that, it's something I need to somehow appropriate.
And recognize maybe that that's missing, and that's a change need for me. That because yeah. if it's almost non-existent in my case, well then maybe there are people encroaching in our world in a way that's not appropriate.
So then this lion, then, as we're looking at them, is a way of grouping together a set of characteristics, which we may have some of, but maybe not in a strong way. Everyone may have a degree of, but in the lion type, these are prominent or strong.
Yes, and again, it's a question of degree. Most people will have some of these characteristics of all four types in some measure. The question is to what level of intensity.
So that's an overview of the first personality type, lions. Our discussions are based largely on the book by Drs. John Trent and Gary Smalley called The Two Sides of Love. Find more information about the book, along with many other radio archives and resources to help your family thrive, at family.ie. That's www.family.ie. You've been listening to today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. All of the features and programmes you've heard about today simply would not be possible without the generosity of our supporters. So a big thanks to you for helping us as we help strengthen individuals and families throughout Ireland. We'd love to hear from you, by the way. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886, or email us radio@family.ie. That's 086-251-6886, or radio@family.ie. So until next time, on behalf of Stephen Carty, Ger Shanahan, Heather Walsh, and our entire team, I'm Ronan Johnston. Slán go fóill. Thank you for listening to Family.ie.